Halfway through Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Drew Spivak. Drew covers the Colorado Avalanche for BSNDenver.com. Drew, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. How's everybody doing out there?
Oh, we're trying to stay warm, which is easier said than done. But
it's freezing here, Drew. I can't feel my legs.
Yeah, I know the feeling. It's been a little cold out here in Denver as well. I've been that completely.
You've got a big football game coming up there tomorrow late afternoon with the Steelers in town against the Broncos in the division round of the NFL. You know, how does Manning look?
Supposedly he looks really well. We'll see how it plays out tomorrow with the cold and everything. But first time he's getting a start here in the playoffs, first time he's getting a start here in about two months. So I know everybody's kind of on edge out here waiting to see what happens with this game tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you know, too bad Tim Tebow isn't there to beat the Steelers in the playoffs again. But
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Anyways, Drew, we brought you on, of course, to talk about the Colorado Avalanche. They're going to visit here in Winnipeg on Monday night. The Avs, you know, go back just over a month ago to December 12th when they were dead last in the Western Conference. Since then, they've been 10-4-2, and they now hold on to the second wild card spot in the Western Conference. How surprised are you that this 10-4-2 run the Avalanche are on? Did you see this coming at all?
You know, I didn't see it coming quite this good, at least. I mean, they got off to such a slow start this season, and they were basically left for dead by pretty much everybody, and I think everybody here in Denver kind of looked at it the same way as well, and especially when you look at just how tough that central division is. But, you know, everything's kind of gone right for them the last month and a half or so. They're getting much better goaltending from Semyon Varlamov. Even the backups in Red O'Bara and Calvin Pickard have stepped in and done a really nice job, and they're starting to score goals. Patrick Waugh's kind of found some line combinations I think that have worked a lot better for him, and putting Matt Duchene and Nathan MacKinnon together I think has been the big part of it, and so that's been much better for him. But I think the big place where it really starts is defensively. This team has been much better defensively than what we've seen from them really the last, going back to probably a year, year and a half, even 2 years now. That's been a big improvement for them. I mean, they're still not, you know, what you would call a great defensive team, and there's still a long ways to go. But I think if you compare it to where they were, they're really starting to step up and play better defensively. They're not getting hemmed in their own zone as much as they were before, and they're transitioning from defense to offense a lot better than they were before. So, excuse me, it's a bit of a surprise to see them kind of make the jump, and now they're, as they sit here, is the second wild card team in the Western Conference. It's been a bit of a surprise, but it's good to see. It's great to see them kind of bouncing back and maybe start to figure this whole thing out.
Drew, you tweeted about this earlier this week. The Avalanche placed Nate Gannon on waivers, and then they recalled Nikita Zadorov and Chris Bigras from the AHL. I guess, is this an opportunity for these guys to prove themselves leading up to the trade deadline and maybe give Joe Sakic something to think about, or do you still see this team acquiring a defenseman before the trade deadline?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because I thought it was pretty interesting timing as far as why they decided to go ahead and call those two guys up. I mean, Zadorov's come up, and you know, he got a little bit of a start this year, but he kind of struggled in the early part of the season, so they wanted to send him down to the AHL to kind of get things figured out and see what he could do down there. And then he goes down to San Antonio, and really it was kind of a weird fit because he was so dominant down there. He was basically kind of a man playing against boys, and he was great down there, but there were times where he just kind of had some lapses, I guess, in concentration. It was almost like he knew he was too good to be playing down there, and it kind of affected his game a little bit. But the call-ups with him and especially Chris Bigras are very interesting, especially the Bigras one, because we've heard all along around here that the Islanders are very interested in this player, and we know the Avalanche is interested in Travis Hamonic, and of course Hamonic has the Avalanche on his list of teams that he could want to come to. So it seems kind of interesting that you know, here we are 6 weeks before the trade deadline, and they're kind of giving these two guys a tryout. So I don't know if it's more along the lines that they're wanting to kind of showcase these two guys for a possibility of a trade, or if these guys are just going to get a legitimate chance. The Avalanche wanted to give them an opportunity, and in turn they send down Nate Gannon, who you know, quite honestly, without a better way to say it, he's not an NHL caliber defenseman. Mm-hmm. I think anybody that's watched this team over the last couple of years knows that Nate Ginnon isn't good enough to be playing in the NHL on a regular basis. And so it was well past time that they made the move. But so far, you know, what we saw the other night from Bigras and Zadorov, they looked like they're going to be some pretty good players in this league. So we'll see whether it's with the Avalanche or if it's with another team of the Avalanche do decide to swing a trade.
It seems like, Drew, that, you know, we were talking about it before you came on in the last segment, they're kind of remaking that defense, if it does stay this way, to be a more of a puck-moving defense and to help the transition game and the speed of, say, guys like MacKinnon and Duchesne, you know, succeed and build on the strengths of the roster. Do you see this reformation as kind of being the Avalanche finally catching up to maybe the other teams who are emphasizing this?
Yeah, I think so. It kind of seems that way. You know, and it helps when, you know, you don't have guys like Brad Stewart in the lineup. Yeah. And, you know, guys like that kind of helps with it and stuff. But, you know, Eric Johnson has been having a terrific year. He's been banged up the last couple mm-hmm. games and not been able to contribute. But when he's been in the lineup, he's really improved that defensive core. And finally putting Eric Johnson with a guy like Francois Beauchemin, who is a competent, you know, top-pairing defenseman, I think that's really helped this team as well. And, you know, you put these guys in the lineup to transition a little bit better, and I think it's only going to help, and it shows. And I think Patrick Wild was kind of hesitant at first to kind of make these changes to put, you know, guys like Zach Redmond and Brandon Gormley in the lineup because he wanted to rely on older guys like Brad Stewart and Nate Ginnon, and I think he was hesitant to do so. But now that he's done it, I think you've seen the improvement in the defense, and hopefully going forward this is something that they keep trying to do. And because if they can improve this defense, we know how talented that front mm-hmm. side of the Avalanche offense is, so that can really make a big boost for this team.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Our guest is Drew Spivak. He covers the Colorado Avalanche for BSNDenver.com. Drew, you look at the, you know, Matt Duchesne and Nathan MacKinnon. They both have 38 points. They both played 45 games. Duchesne named to the All-Star team out of the Central Division. You know, of the two, which one has had the better season, or have they just been that good together that you know, they've been carrying this Avalanche team on their back?
You know, I think if you had to choose which one's had the better season, I think you got to go with Matt Duchesne. I mean, especially after the slow start he had. I think he had 2 goals in the entire month of October. Now here we sit in the middle of January, and he's sitting with 22 goals, and he's already surpassed his goal total for last year. I mean, Matt Duchesne's been spectacular this year. There's no way around it. After that first month of the season, he's been one of the better players in the NHL this year, and it's good to see. But I think, you know, one of the main reasons why is Patrick Waugh is kind of taking some of the defensive responsibilities away from Matt Duchesne by putting him on the right wing as opposed to having him play the center. And Patrick Waugh's finally given Duchesne a player that he can, you know, feel confident with and putting him with Nathan MacKinnon. And we've seen Duchesne over the last couple of years play with some guys that make you shake your head and you're going, well, why is he playing with these two guys on the top line for this team? This shouldn't be happening. But now that he's got Nathan MacKinnon as a center, I think it's been a huge boost for him. But MacKinnon's been better this year as well, too. He's played really, really well. He's already surpassed his goal total from last year. And so those two guys have really been carrying this team, and they're getting contributions from some of these other guys that I'm not sure Avalanche fans really fully expected to see contributions from. You got Carl Soderberg, who, after a slow start, he's been really good the last couple weeks or so. Blake Como's been really good for this team. And so they're getting a lot of these guys that are just, they're really helping this team. But no, there's no question about it that Matt Duchesne has by far been the best player of this team this year.
Drew, we have to ask you about Jerome McGinley. We haven't had you on since he scored his 600th mm-hmm. career goal, and everybody, especially in this room, knows how big of a fan I am of Jerome McGinley. Two-part question on Iggy on the Colorado Avalanche. Do you think that him scoring his 600th goal was somewhat underappreciated in the hockey world? And how important is it to have a guy like Jerome McGinley on this team with all the young forwards? You forget how young Duchesne and Landeskog, and obviously we know how young MacKinnon, but how important is it to have a guy like Iggy with his Stanley Cup experience and the Olympic gold and all that to be around these younger players?
Yeah, I mean, I think to answer the first part of the question, I think it was a little bit underappreciated, and maybe it was just kind of the the manner in which it happened, you know, be kind of a fluky type goal going in off a player's skate the way it was. It's not one of those kind of fancy type goals you see with him. And happening in Colorado, you know, Colorado's kind of become a team that nationally a lot of people aren't really paying a ton of attention to anymore. And so it hasn't really been talked about. I mean, I know he scored a 600th goal, and then I think it was a week later, Alex Ovechkin got his 500th goal, and it seemed like that got more fanfare around the league than again, the 600th goal, which, you know, it's kind of sad because there's, you know, only, what, 19 guys in the history of the NHL that have scored 600 goals. And everybody knows Jerome McGinley is one of the great guys in this league, one of the great players, but one of the great just overall people in this league. So for me, it was kind of disappointing to see that he didn't quite get the fanfare I think it necessarily deserved. But, you know, the second part of the question, I think it's really important to have a guy like him around here. And, you know, Jerome McGinley, like, he's not the same player that he was a couple years ago. Basically, he's kind of been, you know, designated a third and or fourth line guy right now. But I think the important part for the Avalanche is that he's still contributing a little bit to this team. He's not hurting the team like some other guys. Like, you look at an Alex Tanguay who's really hurting this team in a bad way right now. You're not seeing that with Jerome McGinley. He's still got that leadership. He's still got that veteran type presence, a guy that can, you know, still do a lot of things to help this team on a night in, night out basis. But there's no question that having him in that locker room to kind of guide these younger guys for this team, you know, the Matt Duchesne, Nathan MacKinnon, Gabe Landeskog, guys like that, I think it's a big-time help for this team. And if they can, you know, continue this run, having him to kind of steady the ship, I think is going to be really important for this team.
Drew, owner of the Avalanche, Dan Kroenke, just spent $4 trillion for his NFL squad, moving St. Louis to L.A. The you know, in regards to the Avalanche, they're not a cap team. They have about, what, $6.5 million bucks towards the cap. Is this a team that is going to be kind of a play to a budget squad, or is you see how much money he's throwing in the NFL? And I realize it's a different ball game, but at the same time, you know, are the Avs possibly going to be a cap team anytime soon?
You know, I think they're going to be. You know, it's all going to kind of depend because you got Nathan MacKinnon and you got Tyson Barry that are both going to be restricted free agents after this season, so they're both going to get hefty pay raises. I'd be surprised if Tyson Barry's not in that, you know, $5.5 million pay range next year. Nathan MacKinnon could be right around that $5 million mark as well. And they just extended Eric Johnson last season, so he's going to be going into his new deal starting next year as well. So I think you're going to see them kind of get up there. And they've been there in the past. I think last year they were right up against the cap with what they were paying some guys. And, you know, obviously you had Ryan O'Reilly on his team then. But I think they're going to be smart about it. They're not going to go kind of that $6 million per year. I think that's kind of the dividing line with what they're paying Matt Duchesne. He's kind of that top guy that's going to get that top money for this team. So you're not going to see him go real overboard with it. But they got a lot of young guys that are going to be making a decent amount of money. When you look at Duchesne and Landeskog's making just under $6 million, Varlamov's making just under $6 million. So you got a lot of guys who are getting that money. But I don't think they're worried about being a cap team. I just think they have to be real smart with how they spend it, especially though that Tyson Barry and Nathan MacKinnon are going to be getting pretty good pay raises after this season.
Drew, we'll let you go on this last question. Mikko Rantanen was the Avalanche first-round pick this past draft back in 2015. He started the season with the Avs, got 0 points in 6 games. They sent him down to San Antonio of the AHL, where he's been tearing it up. 26 points in 22 games there. He's been named an AHL All-Star. Is there any chance that we might see Mikko Rantanen back up with the Avalanche this season, especially when you look at the lack of offense that the Avs have been getting from their bottom six forward group?
Yeah, I think it's a virtual certainty that we're probably going to see Rantanen, and I think it's going to come pretty soon as well. In fact, Patrick Waugh was actually just asked about him the other day at Morning Skate, and, you know, he basically said that, you know, if Rantanen hadn't been injured, he's got an injured hand that he suffered, we're not sure when, sometime between the final of the World Junior Tournament and when he got back to San Antonio, he suffered it sometime in that range. So he hasn't played a game with the Rampage since he came back from the World Juniors. But, you know, once that injured hand is healthy, I have a feeling that we're going to see him back up with this team and get an opportunity because, like you said, he's been completely dominant down in San Antonio. He's one of those guys, kind of like Nikita Zadorov. He's way too good to be playing down in the AHL. He's a dominant force down there, and the Avalanche could use him because, you know, I mentioned a guy like Alex Tanguay earlier, a guy that's really hurting this team, not really bringing much, you know, being on that left side. You know, that's the position that Mikko Rantanen plays. So if you can bring him up and provide a little bit more of an offensive spark, especially down in that bottom six, that would be huge for this team that needs to get more consistent scoring night in and night out. But I think within the next probably I'd say 2 to 3 weeks, I have a feeling if Ranton is healthy, you're going to see him on this roster. And it's going to be exciting because this kid, I think, could be a really, really special player for this team.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for BSNDenver.com. Drew, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us to discuss the Avalanche.
Go Broncos.
Hey, anytime, guys. It's been a pleasure, and go Broncos. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Drew. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss Jonathan Drouin and Kevin Shattenkirk of the Drouin of the Lightning currently and Shattenkirk currently of the St. Louis Blues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Psycho on Life coming up on June the 5th. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Psycho on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve for this great event, visit rhcf.mb.ca or tweet at us at Illegal Curve and we'll provide you with the additional information. Jonathan Drouin, we know, playing with the Syracuse Crunch of the AHL. We know the Lightning are trying to trade him. He's requested a trade. Here's TSN's Bob McKenzie on our sister station, TSN 690 in Montreal. This is from yesterday about the possibility of Jonathan Drouin heading to the St. Louis Blues.
Honestly, I thought that there was a chance this deal could be done earlier in the week and that if it were the St. Louis Blues that did the deal, it would have been the least surprising thing in the world to me because I just knew that St. Louis was one of the teams that has extreme interest. But as the week unfolded, I think we started to get a sense that a lot of teams other than St. Louis were putting their best foot forward, and teams that included Minnesota, Montreal, Anaheim. The list goes on and on. I even read a story in the Philly papers this morning talking about the Philadelphia Flyers maybe in on Jonathan Drouin. But whether something happens today, tomorrow, with St. Louis, with somebody else, I think there's still a lot of options on the table, and probably the only guy that knows the answer to that question is Steve Yzerman.
A lot of talk of and with the Blues that it would be Robbie Fabbri, another young player heading to the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for Drouin.
Well, it wouldn't just be Fabbri, Drew.
Fabbri and Moore?
Yeah, no way it would just be Fabbri. He's not in the same. He's a good player, but he's not in the same caliber as Drouin.
Okay, so so you are... Drouin has never really proven it at the NHL level. Is that a fair comment?
He hasn't proven it yet.
Consistently?
Well, I don't know if he's been provided with the opportunity provided to do it consistently.
Sure. You can argue whether or not he's got attitude issues. Is that fair?
You could argue he doesn't, too, yeah.
Okay.
Both ways.
So, I mean, if you're the St. Louis Blues, you know, are you giving up Fabbri, who's contributing? You know, he's got 10 goals already. You know, are you giving up Fabbri plus something in addition to get Drouin, and you don't really think twice about it?
Well, it depends on what the something is.
Sure.
But, I mean, you're obviously...
If Fabry's the centerpiece.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, does that expand to Shattenkirk? Does that include netminers? I mean, there's a lot of rumors going around as
Shattenkirk
to what...
and Fabbri for Drouin?
Well, not as what as not as one piece, okay? Not as one piece in terms of not Fabbri and Shattenkirk for Drouin, but is that part of a larger puzzle? I do not think the Lightning would trade Drouin for Fabbri because Drouin has far more of an upside than Fabbri, with due respect to Fabbri. Fabbri's a good player. He's really smart. He's shifty. Drouin is game-breaking talent. It's different.
I don't know how high Drouin's ceiling is. He's got 6 goals in 89 career games. So I don't think Jonathan Drouin, in my opinion, is worth much more than Robbie Fabbri. By the way, I think that if you hear this trade so much that it's Drouin for Fabbri, it's probably not going to happen.
It's possible. That's
right?
Very
so,
possible.
I mean,
where there's smoke, there's no
but
fire.
I don't know. Rich and I have argued this quite a bit. I mean, you know, Drouin was a great junior. He put up great numbers with the Halifax Mooseheads. He's clearly got attitude issues. Why has he fallen out of favor with John Cooper and Steve Yzerman so quickly? I mean, Jonathan Drouin, they
should argue
be...
Steve Stamkos has fallen out of favor with both of those guys.
Right, but I mean, Drouin is a different animal than Steven Stamkos. Actually, they're both human beings, but I mean, you know, like...
Glad that one's a mammal and one's not a lizard or something.
Right, but I mean... I look at Drouin, and if you're whether you're St. Louis or any other team, Rich, I think you're picking up a player who I don't know if you know what you're going to get right now, and I think it remains to be seen what his ceiling is. I mean, I guess as a third overall pick, you think his ceiling might be 40 goals and 80 points. His ceiling might be 15 goals and 40 points. I think at this point, he hasn't proven himself. He certainly couldn't stick in the lineup for the Lightning. You know, they had guys like Cedric Paquette and Jonathan Marchessault. They were playing ahead of Drouin. So I don't know. I mean, I think right now Tampa Bay is definitely at a disadvantage, though, moving Jonathan Drouin. But I think your point is well taken, Rich. I don't know if they necessarily trade Drouin for Fabry straight up or a player like Fabry straight up.
What about Kevin Shattenkirk? You hear a lot of rumors that Kevin Shattenkirk is on the market and available out of the St. Louis Blues because of the salary cap issues, and they won't be able to sign him because he's an unrestricted free agent after next season.
Well, we asked Kelly Chase about that a while back, and Kelly was saying he didn't think he'd be on the market. It appears now that he is, if he wasn't before, and Kelly's obviously close to the team and knows the value Kelly Chase does of Kevin Shattenkirk and outlined it, and we've talked about it. Kevin Shattenkirk's an excellent defenseman, guys. He can quarterback your first unit. He can control the play with the puck on his stick. He sees the ice exceptionally well. Does he sometimes maybe not fit into the defensive style of play of St. Louis and that Ken Hitchcock likes a big, you know, a physical team? Sure, but that's not his strength. Don't make him something he's not, and they haven't done that. They've sunk a lot of money into Alex Pietrangelo, and it's been the Colton Parayko has been a pleasant surprise for them on the back end. So if they're paying Shattenkirk big money after, not next season, the season after, and Pietrangelo, and then Parayko also is a free agent when Shattenkirk is, that's a lot of money to sink into those guys. Having said that, I'm not particularly sure why Shattenkirk is available.
That's what my point was. I mean, this is a top offensive defenseman, as you talk about, Richie. He had a career year last year, and they want to move him.
Well, a team that needs offense, right?
Exactly. There's something going on there that I think is beyond. I'm not arguing, Drew, that the contract doesn't have something to do with it.
Right.
But you'd think that the Blues would just pay him fair market value.
I mean, when he comes up for his deal, he'll be 27, 28. So, okay, you sign him for 28 through 33. You have Pietrangelo. You know, you have a bunch of guys who might be getting a little bit older, but they're not like you're signing these guys 32, 37.
Yeah.
So it is a bit surprising, unless his contract demands are crazy. But you also, he's on pending UFA. It's not after this season. It's after next.
What's the urgency to do it right now?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a game-breaking skill player up front, that might be it, and training from a position of strength. That I can understand. And that's probably the line of thing. Doug Armstrong's a smart guy. That's where they're coming from.
Richie, I should correct myself. He actually didn't have a career year last year, but he missed he missed 26 games. He had 44 points in 56 games, so he would have set career highs for points. But the point is, I mean, he's been a consistent 40-plus point defenseman for the last 5 years with the St. Louis Blues, and those just don't grow on trees.
Do you see Shattenkirk fitting with Tampa Bay?
Well, I think Kevin Shattenkirk fits with anybody, Drew.
Okay. Do you see this if it is, you know, if there's a trade to be had between the Lightning and the Blues, do you see Shattenkirk and Fabry being a part of it, and you know, Tampa Bay gives up Drouin and maybe one of their goaltenders? You see it as a big, I mean, that's a blockbuster in this day and age in the NHL.
You mean like Ben Bishop?
One of their goaltenders, Ben Bishop or Vasilevsky or Gudlevskis. I mean,
is St. Louis going to make a risky play for a guy like Vasilevsky not knowing what you're getting? Or is it going to be Bishop, who's in their system beforehand and has 2 years left on his deal and would change their goaltending? I mean, that's a question. It's also, are you trading a left side defenseman back? I mean, they've been happy with Joel Edmondson back there, St. Louis. They said Yzerman doesn't want to take on a lot of money. How does it affect Steven Stamkos? That's a lot of moving parts here.
It is. I mean, Tampa Bay's got about $2.1 million in salary cap space right now.
Right, but if you sign Stamkos,
I don't think
they're going to have said that before. I know Coburn's coming off the books, but
tell you what, if St. Louis really wants to go for it, maybe that's their rental player that they get is Stamkos. You really make it a huge deal or something.
I don't know.
I mean, it's probably not going to happen, but I mean, if you're talking trade, you might as well talk as many pieces as you want. You know, build it up and then break it down or something along those lines.
We've talked a lot this year about Travis Hamonic and how hard it has been for the Islanders to trade him, Richie.
Yeah.
I think it's Drouin is just as hard, you could argue, for Stevie Yzerman to move for the exact reasons that we've already talked about.
Well, Hamonic would have been gone if he expanded his list, though.
Yeah, that's true. Different situation. He wants to be closer to home. But Drouin, too, I think, I know we've argued, you know, about it, albeit gentlemanly, that, I mean, we we don't know what his ceiling is, and he's been a little bit underachieving for the Lightning so far. So what are you going to get in return? It's not going to be a draft pick.
No, it'll be an interesting one when the Drouin trade eventually happens, and we'll bring you, of course, all the details here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's head to break. When we come back, Anson Carter, NHL on NBC studio analyst, joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Third and final hour this Saturday morning, the 16th of January. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by analysts Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the show Anson Carter. Anson is an NHL on NBC analyst. Anson, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Anson?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Just here in South Bend, Indiana, getting ready to prepare for this second game of doubleheader between Merrimack College and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Well, that should be well worth watching this afternoon, as some good college hockey to be had. Anson, obviously brought you on. We want to talk about the NHL in general, sort of look around the league. We spent a lot of our show so far this morning sort of talking about potential trades involving younger players. We were specifically talking about Jonathan Drouin. You know, he's obviously requested a trade out of Tampa Bay. You know, you were a young player who was traded, you know, early on in your career. What's it like being sort of a young, up-and-coming new NHLer when you get traded for that very first time?
It's like a slap in the face, you know, especially when you get traded and you're not expecting it. You know, I never requested a trade when I was younger, especially, remember when I was in Boston, for example, and I got traded to Bruins. I started off my career with the Washington Capitals, and I thought I'd be a big part of the Capitals' future. I knew they had an older core of veteran players, and eventually they want to get younger, but I think David Poile was thinking the opposite. He thought he had his older core veteran players, and he had one last kick at the can with this group before he had to make a deal. So when he packaged myself and Jason Allison and Jim Carrey to Boston for Rick Tocchet, Adam Oates, and Bill Ranford, I was shocked. I was actually sitting at my college roommate Terry Karenin's place watching the Washington Bullets, their name at the time, now the Washington Wizards, play basketball. And over the ticker, I saw Caps make huge trades, more news at halftime. So automatically, I'm going crazy. And this is back in 96, 97, where I had my cell phone, and I didn't have my phone on all the time because I was trying to save on my airtime. You know, the same, keep your phone on and not affecting your minutes. So I'm trying to keep my minutes down and my airtime down so I wouldn't get raped by a Motorola on my charges. And sure enough, I turned my phone on. I called Jason Allison after I couldn't get a hold of anybody. And I go, Allie, I heard a big trade. Like, who got traded? Was it Pivo, which is Michael Bavanko, or Bonsai, which is Peter Bondra? And he's like, no, idiot, we got traded. And my mouth hit the floor. I was like, wait a minute, what's your blockbuster deal? We never play. We play like 5 minutes a game. What kind of a blockbuster deal should that be? And when he told me who was going the other way, I was shocked. And I finally checked my voicemail. I had 80 voicemails from Harry Sinden to David Poile to my mom, wondering if I was okay. My dad was wondering if I was okay. I had friends from high school back in Toronto hearing about the news. So it was tough. It was my first real, indication about pro sports being, this is a business. Even though my heart was in D.C., I wanted to be there. I wasn't playing that much, but I thought I had a chance to really grow up in the organization. I finally realized that, hey, this is a business. And it doesn't matter who you are, what you do. You saw Wayne Gretzky get traded at some point in his career, too. So for a guy like Jonathan Drouin, I think his trade request is a little premature. I think he's looking around his peers that got drafted in the same draft year, and he's thinking, wow, these guys have had an impact on their teams. But he's forgetting that those players went to awful hockey clubs. The Colorado Avalanche isn't the same as the Tampa Bay Lightning, a Stanley Cup finalist. So I'm sure he's looking at his old wingman, Nathan McKinnon, thinking, well, look, Nate's doing his thing out in Colorado. I should be doing my thing, too. But it depends on the situation you go to. So I think as a young player, he should have been a little bit more patient in the situation and really worked on his game, and eventually he'd get a shot.
Anson, your last year in the NHL, 2006-2007, you played with the Carolina Hurricanes for 10 games. and you played with a very young Andrew Ladd and a very young Eric Staal, both players who are pending unrestricted free agents. How hard do you think it is for those two players, knowing that there is a good chance that they might be traded before the trade deadline?
It's difficult because both those players are wearing the C. Like when I played with both of them, they're fairly young in their career, starting out in their career. I mean, they had some success winning a championship there in Carolina. But it's difficult when you have the C on your jersey and the organization is looking towards you as being the face of the organization. The community is looking towards you as being the face of the organization. And they're both emotionally invested in those communities. So it's hard to play out that year with the contract situation hanging over your head because you don't know if you're going to be there or not. And deep down, I know both those players want to be in those markets. They strongly believe in those teams, but not just for those players, but for players in that locker room too. You're looking around thinking, if I'm in Winnipeg, I'm looking around thinking, we finally made the playoffs last year. The building's packed all the time. Tremendous fan support here in Winnipeg. How come we can't have Dustin Byfuglien or Andrew Ladd signed? Like, what's going on here? Like, is it a money thing? I know the Canadian dollar is taking a beating, but NHL players don't look at that.
Yeah.
Their worlds are so tunnel vision that they don't care about the Canadian dollar. All they see is the arena being packed every single night, and they see that we made the playoffs. And that's all that matters. They want to build on that. And when you don't have your leader signed, and it's up in limbo, and you're asked about it every single day, because you're not thinking about it. Only time guys in the room think about it is when media comes in and says, hey, guys, what do you think about Andrew Ladd not being signed? Hey, guys, what do you think about Dustin Byfuglien not being signed? Then you start to think about it. But up until that point, it's not even crossing your mind. So it makes it very tough because you look around the room thinking, are we really here to win long-term or what's the motivation here for this organization?
And so you played in Vancouver for a season, had a very successful season. And I want to ask you about the Sedin brothers. I mean, you played with them for large portions of that year, and we know how good they are. I guess two-part question is, are you surprised that they're still producing at the level that they're producing at their age? And I guess the second part is because they're producing so well, does Vancouver have to move on from them if they want to do a full rebuild?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not really that surprised because playing with Danny and Hank, speed was never their forte.
Yeah.
And when players get older, you talk about players declining because they lost a step. Well, they never had a step to begin with, so there's no step there for them to lose. Where they play fast is with the speed at which they move the puck and the speed at which they think the game, and that never goes anywhere. You've seen some of those old-timer games with guys that played in the league for a long time. Their legs might not be moving, but their brain is moving. Uh-huh. So when the puck's on their stick, they move it right quick to the right guy every single time, and that's what you're seeing with Danny and Hank, and that's why you haven't seen such a sharp decline in their game. Yarmy Yager, same thing. Speed was never his forte, and he's still producing at a high level. So with those two players, I'm not that surprised. They've kept themselves in tremendous shape over the years. They're great, great examples for young players in that organization. But I do believe that if they want to do a complete rebuild, you're going to have to trade them eventually while they still have some value. If you keep hanging on to Danny and Hank, then you try to trade them when they have zero value, and you put yourselves in a hole, and you really back yourselves up for the next 10 years. So I still think they're capable of contributing at a high level, but they have to play together. I think they're most dangerous together. They're good players separately, but when they're together, they're really an unstoppable force.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Anson Carter. Anson is an NHL on NBC analyst. Anson, I want to look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. You mentioned, you know, obviously last year's Stanley Cup finalists, they go with the Blackhawks. It's a quality series. They fall just short. They're sitting there with Steven Stamkos as the great unknown. He's a pending unrestricted free agent. No sign that there's any real contract movement at that point in time. You know, what's it like, you know, what do you imagine it's like being in that dressing room as a member of the Lightning, knowing that one of the best goal scorers in the league might be on his way out any time now, and there's the great uncertainty that's hanging over the organization?
Well, we went through something similar to that when I was in Boston. It was similar, but it was different because we had Ray Bourque, and there was a lot of chatter that Bubba was going to get traded to a Stanley Cup contender to try to win a cup to cap off his illustrious career. And we were always looking over shoulders. A young player, you didn't want to see him leave, but at the same time, you were pumped to see him leave because now you had a chance to really step into a leadership position where that could never happen if he was still there. Now, it's different with Steven Stamkos in Tampa because he's so young. He isn't in his late 30s in the twilight of his career. He's still in his prime. So you want to be on the best team as possible. And Tampa Bay, I think, has the best chance of a guy like Steven Stamkos in their lineup. However, going this long this season and not being signed is not a good sign for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't care what Steve Yzerman says. I don't care what Steven Stamkos says, how everyone's waiting for this to play out. You rarely ever see one of your top players stay this long. And if you're a top player like Steven Stamkos, the organization gives you and has given you everything you wanted besides the ability to play center on a regular basis. So that should tell you all you need to know from Tampa Bay Lightning. If you want to sign this guy and he wants to be a centerman, well, that's what you should do. Make him a center as a full-time basis. And if you can't, acknowledge it and then move on. But to have this player in the situation twisting in the wind, it's not good for the Tampa Bay Lightning, that's for sure. But I'm sure guys like Tyler Johnson and Palat are looking over their shoulders thinking, well, if Steven Stamkos leaves, this will officially be our team. And we had a successful run in the AHL, winning a championship in the AHL. We took this team to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, so there's no reason why we think there should be a sharp drop-off if we aren't able to retain a player like Steven Stamkos. I think it'll definitely hurt this organization if he doesn't resign, because he's a talented player, that's for sure.
Anson, what's your take on this whole John Scott situation? Named to the All-Star game, then traded to the Montreal Canadiens a couple of days ago. He was sent down to St. John's in the AHL, and now there's a question if he's going to play in the All-Star game at all. Do you think, first of all, John Scott should be playing in the All-Star game in a couple of weeks?
Oh, absolutely not. No chance. I mean, if I'm John Scott, I'm taking that opportunity. I mean, it's once a lifetime for a player like John Scott and his skill set to be there with his family and taking the whole All-Star experience. So I don't blame him for wanting to go. However, the All-Star game needs to be taken more seriously as far as I'm concerned. This is the showcase of our best players, the showcase of our game. Fans need to see our best players competing at the highest level. Now, people are saying, well, we want to see more defense. We want to see a tighter checking game. No, that's not what the All-Star game is all about. Look at all these other sports, football in Hawaii or basketball. They're high-scoring games. Like, they want to see creativity. They want to see skill. They don't want to see mucking and grinding out there. So I don't really care if the score is 15-10. I want to be entertained by an awesome play by Steven Stamkos. I want to see someone dangle, you know, on the back end like a Dustin Byfuglien. And I want to see a great glove save by Pecorino. Like, I want to see that stuff. I don't want to see a player out there that's kind of like a sideshow to the All-Star festivities. And that's exactly what John Scott's being included in there really is. And he's been waived several times. He just got traded. I think the league should step in, or at this point, maybe John should even step in and say, hey, guys, you know, I appreciate it. It was good while it lasted. However, I'm going to bow out and let a player like Shane Doan get in there, a player that's paid his dues. He's had a pretty good season this year. Or a guy like Max Domi, who is going to be one of the future faces of the Arizona Coyotes. He's had a tremendous first half for his rookie season. But if you wanted to get this thing taken seriously, you really have to say, John, you need to step out, because it's hard enough to get NHL All-Stars to agree to play, which blows my mind as well, too. Guys make up every excuse under the sun to get a win and get that extra 4 days worth of rest. However, players are there to be celebrated, so it really isn't that tough mentally or physically on your time. I think all of our top players in the game should be there representing hockey the way it should be represented.
Anson, at the end of your career, just the last part, you played in Switzerland for a short period of time, about 15 games. Auston Matthews has been basically dominant there for a young player playing over in Switzerland. How surprised are you that he's been able to put up the goal totals he has at such a young age?
I'm not surprised. I've been following Auston Matthews' career for quite some time. We had the same agent, Pat Brisson, and Breeze has kept me abreast of every young player that he represents, comes to the system, and you know, what their upside potentially could be. And if Auston Matthews' birthday had been a little bit different, we'd be talking about Auston Matthews and Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel for last year's draft. And I know a lot of people would consider possibly trading or even drafting Auston Matthews ahead of Connor McDavid last year. I mean, that's how strongly people believe in this kid's hockey ability. So for him to be able to go over there and dominate, I'm not that surprised, because the talent that he is so exceptional. But it is a good league over there. It's great hockey there. I tell players all the time that instead of wasting your time playing the American Hockey League, and if you don't think you have a shot at playing the National Hockey League, go over there and play in Switzerland. It's a great schedule. You get time off. You get a chance to be with your family. You get to experience living in Europe. I mean, it gave me a great opportunity to see and appreciate what players go through as European players when they come over here to North America. You should think about players that come over here and they say, well, I don't speak English. Don't speak English. Well, you know what? That's a horse crap excuse. Because when I went over there to Europe, I made sure that I had someone come over to the house every single day and help teach me how to speak Italian. So I was trying to submerge myself into the culture so I could understand that when I'm in Lugano and guys in the locker room are speaking Italian, I knew a little bit what was going on. I tried as best as I could. Same thing working on my French that I knew from before. Same thing picking up on some German. So I have a greater appreciation for what guys go through. And Austin has his mom over there, which is nice. It's nice to have family members with you over there. That helps ease the transition and make sure that you aren't homesick, because you're a long ways away from home. And the time difference is kind of tough, too, to have phone calls at a regular hour. So I can relate to what he's going through, but I'm not that surprised that he's dominating over there, because he's a heck of a talent.
Anson, none of us can speak Italian, but I can assure you all of us know how to eat Italian. So we've got one last question for you here, Anson. We wanted to ask you about Soul on Ice, which there was a screening for the movie on Wednesday evening, and you're, of course, an executive producer of that movie. Why was it so important for you to be involved with this project, and how has it been received so far?
Oh, it was well received in D.C. We're very fortunate to have Mr. Leontis come and support the film, the owner of the Washington Capitals, Barry Trotz, Manitoba boy, as you guys would know. Mm-hmm. He was there, coach number one team in the National Hockey League, Washington Capitals. Commissioner Bettman, Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, William Reed, the first black player to play in the National Hockey League. Brian Jennings was there, CMO of the National Hockey League. We had a lot of influential people come out, and we had a pretty packed theater there in D.C., to come out and support the film. And, you know, it was great because we had the Q&A with Kevin Weeks as our host and our moderator. Kwame Mason was there, the director. But initially when Kwame was putting the project together and he came to me and he asked if I'd be involved in the film, nobody's really getting back to him. And it's tough because I know the world of sports, that it's a pretty close-knit group of people. And if you're not in that inner circle, you're not getting your calls returned. So I told him that I'll help him open some of these doors to reach out to people that we need to get in the film. But we need to tell a story that's educational. Nobody wants to hear a story that's just based on black players had a hard time playing the National Hockey League. I think that's pretty much assumed. Everyone's heard that story before. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to create a piece that was educational and that would inform people that played the game before and guys are coming up after us, that, you know, there's more to the game than just P.K. Subban. You know, there's more to the game. And even just a Willie O'Ree. And Willie O'Ree is the most important person out there. But I didn't know Willie O'Ree or who he was when I was growing up in Toronto. I knew who Val James was. I knew who Tony McKechnie was because he played for Buffalo and Toronto. And I knew who Grant Fuhr was because he won those cups in Edmonton. But I didn't know the history of hockey in Eastern Canada. I didn't know about all the other different black players that were playing. So it was good to put this piece together because now we can go around and take it to potentially every single city in the National Hockey League and take it and work with the Hockey's for Everyone program and educate these young players of what the game is all about. You know, and the game is growing. If we want to grow revenues for the business of hockey, we have to expand the viewership of hockey. It just can't be the same demographic all the time. So if we want to compete with the major sports, we have to expand that demographic. And in order to do that, you need to have more inclusion, which the league has been spot on about over the years. I mean, the game has grown so much since I was drafted in 92 by the Quebec Nordiques. And, you know, back in D.C., I brought it back to the political climate down there. You know, how many of my friends wanted to aspire to be the president of the United States of you know, as a black man? Nobody. Now, after Obama was elected, I've got a lot of my friends and their kids saying, you know what, I could be the president of the United States, because they could see someone that's that guy that looks like them. Well, it's hard for black parents to allow their kids to play hockey if they don't see a lot of black faces out there. And that was a challenge that was I had to overcome as a kid. My parents, living in Toronto, being from Barbados initially, they're like, well, you can't play hockey. Black people don't play hockey. So the parents need to see black players playing to allow their kids to play. And then once the kids start playing, they need to see players that look like them. I love Mike Bossy. I love Mario Lemieux. But my idol growing up was Michael Jordan. Because I think subconsciously, besides winning championships, he looked like me. So now when you have P.K. Subban out there doing what he's doing, Wayne Simmons doing what he's doing, now other players can look at these players and say, wow, these guys are top players in their respective teams. I want to play hockey and I want to be like them. And that really is what the piece is all about. And it's no different than Swedes looking at a guy like Boris Salming and saying, look at Boris Salming. He came over. There's that stigma attached to Swedes being quote-unquote chicken Swedes. Mm-hmm. But Boris Salming was one of the toughest Maple Leafs I saw. He got abused every single game, he had a mark on him every single game. But for him to be able to persevere and fight through that, now we have Swedish captains in this league, and that Swedish influence really helped change the way the game is being played.
The movie is called Soul on Ice. It's a documentary about the past, present, and future black athletes in hockey. Anson Carter is an NHL on NBC analyst. He's going to be calling this afternoon's Merrimack and Notre Dame college hockey game on NBC Sports Network. Anson, really appreciate your time and insight this morning. Have a good call in the college game, and thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Anson. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss Joel Quenneville and his contract extension. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Anson Carter, NHL on NBC analyst, for some great insight into the game. That documentary, Soul on Ice, we encourage you to check that out. That sounds fantastic as well. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Joel Quenneville signs a 3-year contract extension with the Chicago Blackhawks. He's now second place all-time on the NHL's list of all-time coaching victories with 784 wins after last night's victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is Quenneville possibly underappreciated as a head coach in the NHL, given his litany of success both in Colorado, in St. Louis, and now in Chicago?
Yeah, I'll be frank, and not Frank Zappia, but I do believe...
You're on today.
I do.
You had a good night's sleep or something?
I did have a good night's sleep. Went to bed nice and early. I think it was tucked in by 11. Actually, I wasn't tucked in. I was non-tucked.
Yeah.
But
one tuck, one no tuck.
Exactly. You know, you look at Joel Quenneville and his track record, and he's been a good coach going back to the days of Colorado and St. Louis. He's got 3 cups here in the last 6 years. And is he maybe, Richie, a little bit underappreciated because he's got Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Marian Hossa and Duncan Keith? We could go on and on with all the great players that the Chicago Blackhawks have right now and have had over the last 6 years. But I've always liked Joel Quenneville's style, and I've always liked how I think he is a, more of a player's coach and less of a disciplinarian. I'm not saying that Joel Quenneville can't be hard on his players, but I think he's, to a certain degree, let his players play more than other coaches, maybe a more strict coach like a Ken Hitchcock, maybe, Richie, because Joel Quenneville is old school in some respects, but I've always liked his coaching style, and he's always seemed to, and this maybe has a lot to do with the players that he has in Chicago, but he's always kind of promoted an aggressive style. It's like quick strike offense,
for sure.
Right? And he's got the players that can do that. But to go back to your question, yeah, I mean, he is the second most winning coach of all time behind Scotty Bowman. He's not going to catch Scotty Bowman. Scotty Bowman and Al Arbor, you're talking about right there. Those are the two greatest coaches of all time, in my opinion. So if Joel Quenneville is second, that must make him one of the greatest coaches of all time as well.
Well, yeah, he's done a great job for many years, right? I mean, the St. Louis teams were argued a goaltender away from being winners. He took Colorado teams that were kind of a mishmash of talent in terms of where they were sitting at that point in time. I mean, he coached with Crawford to win the Cup in 96. And then he gets a Chicago squad, and I think Yazzie's point is very well taken. He coaches them to their strengths. And that's so important, is you emphasize what you're good at, puck moving. Now, can he be hard on the players? For sure. And there are times they probably don't like him. But when you win, it really doesn't matter. And his team has won. And his team has won in different ways in terms of being down 3-1 to the Red Wings. And they've been dominant in certain times. They've faced adversity. The core has stayed the same, but the periphery peripheral players have changed. And goaltending has changed. So he's adapted. And he's done a tremendous job. And when you win that many games, and now, of course, I mean, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to say, well, with Chris Pronger, Duncan Keith on your team for most of those years, you're going to be pretty good. For sure.
Sure.
But this guy hasn't been gifted Dominic Hasek every year either. So, you know, he has done it with different pieces, and I think it's full credit to him. And he is he underappreciated? I think maybe because of how much Mike Babcock is appreciated. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's a bad thing because he's a great coach. Maybe Quenneville, there's not enough room for so many coaches to be, you know, praised all the time. He's there for underappreciated. I don't think in the game he is underappreciated, though.
Sure. I think what, you know, as great as his accomplishments are, I think that he's also been able to sort of keep his ego in check. You know, with a team of high-profile superstars, he seems like he's happy to let them have the spotlight and let them sort of, you know, carry the team and everything else. And he's sort of under the radar, which, you know, might speak to my underappreciated comment. But I think that's important, too, is that as a coach, he's been willing to let the other guys sort of, you know, be in the spotlight more so than somebody maybe by the name of John Cooper. Maybe John Cooper should have taken a lesson from Joel Quenneville on letting your superstars be and not meddling with a good thing, you know. And I think that, you know, to keep everybody happy in Chicago, sure, winning helps. But to keep everybody happy, given the egos and given the superstars and given, you know, just sort of high-intensity, high-performing players like that is impressive to have been able to keep everything hunky-dory there so far.
And, Drew, as you know, coaches are hired to be fired, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, all that matters is winning. And that's what Joel Quenneville does. He just wins. And it's tough to not praise him and call him one of the best coaches when he's been mm-hmm. doing it for so long. You know, we talked about it. Before he was in Chicago, he was in Colorado and St. Louis. And, you know, he won there. And just because you have Taves, Kane, Hossa, Keith, Seabrook, the list goes on and on and on, mm-hmm. doesn't mean you're going to win every year. And if there's one negative about the Chicago Blackhawks over the last 5 or 6 years, it might be that they haven't been as good during the regular season. But sure. If you think about it, that doesn't matter. I mean, once the puck drops in mid-April for this first round of the playoffs, all that matters is if you're winning those series and you're winning games at that point in the season. Mm-hmm. And that's when they always save their best for last. Maybe not so much right now. They've won 10 games in a row after beating Toronto yesterday. But, I mean, Joel Quenneville, to Richie's point, he coaches to his strengths. I think he manages the bench really well. I mean, last year, the Chicago Blackhawks were essentially playing with four defensemen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't see Kimmo Timonen very much in the first round or the second round of the playoffs, or for that matter, in the Western Conference Finals of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, it was Oduya, Jarmelson, Keith, and Seabrook.
Well, that's one thing about Quenneville. He likes you, and he respects you, and he plays you. I mean, Trevor Daley, didn't like Trevor Daley, he's gone.
Yeah.
That was it. Trevor Daley's a good player. Just didn't fit into what they wanted to do. And he relies on those guys. So he's leaning on Taves, Kane. Now Panarin is getting in there. But Taves, Kane, Keith, and Seabrook. And that's the core they built around. And let's say this, guys. I mean, apparently the Scotty Bowman, what we talk about, Stan Bowman, there was a disconnect there. And he won and eliminated that issue because winning cures all.
That's right. Before we head to break, or as we head to break, here's Joel Quenneville talking about passing Al Arbor for second all-time on the NHL's wins list for an NHL coach.
It's happened quickly. I've been very fortunate here in Chicago. We've had a lot of success, great teams, and you know, throughout the career, I've been around great players and great teams and been very fortunate here. But the amazing part about how quickly it's gone by and how fast it seems like it's happened, but it's I feel fortunate and excited as well.
Twenty minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Coming up tomorrow, pardon me, not tomorrow, next week at Rumors, Danelle Rawlings is going to be in town. You know him from Comedy Central's Chappelle Show. Right now, caller number, what number?
Let's go seven.
Seven?
It's a long wait. I'd say three.
Caller number three. I like Rich's idea better. Caller number three is going to win two tickets to see Danelle Rawlings Wednesday night at Rumors So give us a call right now, 204-780-1290. You'll win two tickets to see Donnell Rawlings at Rumors on Wednesday.
I've already got tickets to that show.
You're going to be seeing him next week?
He was hilarious on the Chappelle Show. I don't know if you've seen that, the sketches that he was on. Amazing.
Yeah. He was very funny, so you can check him out at Rumors coming up next week, of course. And Anze Kopitar from the Los Angeles Kings. The ink isn't dry on it just yet, but by all accounts, he has signed an 8-year, $80 million contract extension with the Los Angeles Kings. We've been talking about this this contract extension for weeks now. It's finally come to fruition. It'll be the third highest salary cap hit behind Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. 8 years, $80 million. Does this sound right for Anze Kopitar? Is that what you expected it to come in and around?
Yeah. I don't think any about this was surprising. I don't think it was surprising that this contract was signed. I don't think the term is overly surprising. I don't think the amount is overly surprising either. I mean, it did take a while to get to it. There's a little back and forth, sure. But I thought everybody in this room, I think, agreed that this contract was going to get done. And what are they paying? They're paying him slightly below, what, Kane, Toews?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy controls the game. He's not your dominant offensive player in the way that Patrick Kane is. But he's similar in what he brings to the table as Toews. They do it in kind of a different way. Kopitar dominates the game along the boards, and he dominates defensively. He's big. He's reliable. He makes other players better. And he is, you know, it's also the aspect, and we talk about it. Ezzy, what do you do? What do you do if he leaves? You can't replace him. There's no way to replace a guy like that, and it makes sense. And I always say that it's better off that you have to figure out how to work with the bottom of your roster and the money than it is to cheap out in the top of it.
And we talked to John Rosen, who is the LA Kings insider, about this last week on the show, and he thought that it was going to get done very quickly. But, you know, Richie, you mentioned that Anze Kopitar isn't a dominant offensive player, but he's consistently around 55-60 points during the regular season. But more importantly, he's led the Kings in scoring in the playoffs. Yeah. And he's led the Kings, I believe, the last 8 years in regular season scoring. And as you mentioned, they couldn't let Anze Kopitar go. And he's 28 years old, and he's in the prime of his career. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you sign him for 8 years, so that takes you to 36, if my math is correct. And, you know, maybe he has to sign one more contract, Rich, like another two or three-year contract. But, I mean, he's going to finish his career most likely as an L.A. King here. And, I mean, by the way, I love what Anze Kopitar has done for hockey in Slovenia, by the way. I mean, Slovenia is a small country, Richie.
Yep.
And he is by far the most recognizable superstar in Slovenia. And, you know, there have been pieces done both in L.A. and by the NHL Network and everything like that about Kopitar taking the cup back to Slovenia. And his dad was a coach, and he had to leave Slovenia to play, I believe, was it Sweden? He played before going to the Kings. It was Sweden or maybe it was Russia, I forget. But before he was drafted by the LA Kings, he played pro in Europe because there just isn't enough strong leagues in Slovenia. But as an aside, this, you know, Richie mentions Jonathan Toews. Aside from Jonathan Toews, and I don't know if this is even debatable, Anze Kopitar is the best two-way forward in the NHL. And in this day and age, you can have a lot of good offensive players. And the Kings do, by the way, Richie. Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli,
sure.
Tanner Pearson. I mean, they have a lot of offense. Dustin Brown, if he picks up his game again.
Dustin Brown, yeah. That.
Well, he struggled.
But the point is that they play a heavy style of game and Daryl Sutter style of game.
Yep.
Not saying he'll be there for all that time. He probably won't because, you know, there's word that he probably wants to move away from coaching a little bit here. But he's the identity. That is the identity.
Sure. I mean,
and if you're up the middle, if you want to stay up the middle with Kopitar, Doughty, and Quick, pretty good shape. I'll worry about the rest later.
Sure.
Give me those three guys under big time deals. I'll worry about the other guys later.
They are going to have to worry about something else this offseason. They have serious salary cap issues. But like you said, Richard, I mean, you don't want to, like you said, you're to your point exactly, you know, you'll fill in your bottom players and you'll switch those guys around, keep your core together, and you have no reason to be concerned. You should be year in, year out a perennial Stanley Cup contender.
Well, you know, Richie mentions Drew Doughty, probably the best defenseman in the NHL, if not at the very worst a top three defenseman. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Quick gets hot in the playoffs. You want to play this team in the playoffs?
No.
I wouldn't.
No, I agree with you.
I mean, there's no reason why they can't represent the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Could be the Kings and Blackhawks again in the West Final.
It could
be.
That'd be awesome.
For the fans, it would be terrific.
For the league, it would be terrific, too.
That's true. I mean, you're right. The hockey and you get the big markets and everything else, you know, there's no reason why that wouldn't be great for everybody. Any impact on the Stamkos negotiations?
Well, I thought Stamkos was going to be in the 11 to 12 range anyways.
As younger.
So I'm not surprised. He was always going to be the most expensive contract in the league.
Yep.
So I don't think this really matters too much.
Okay. Big congratulations goes out to Adam Sitkowski. He was caller number 3. He won the 2 tickets to go see Donnell Rawlings at Rumors coming up next week. If you
Adam played goal for us a few months ago when we were playing hockey. He's a
like
goalie.
Insider deal?
I know Adam.
You know Adam? Okay. Well, I'm glad. Well,
no,
there you go.
I mean, it's not an insider deal.
No,
I mean,
it's, yeah.
I'm joking. Okay. I thought it was caller number 7, Drew.
No, as he said, it's caller.
Sorry, Adam. Congrats to Adam.
And congrats to Adam. If, in case you missed out on it and you want to get tickets, check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com. You can win tickets to see, or see, buy tickets to see Donnell Rawlings. Let's head to break. When we come back, a couple trades in and around the NHL. We'll talk about them next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Here, Saturday morning, one final segment.
There we go.
He got it in time there, Chris. Richard was giving him a look that he wasn't getting his Bruce Springsteen to end the show. It would have been all sorts of tension in the studio.
Richie gets very upset when we don't play Springsteen.
It's true. It's really unfortunate. But anyways, you got it, Richie. No reason to be upset with Chris. He's doing the great job.
Chris. Chris is a good guy.
Couple trades in and around the NHL, including one that occurred around 2:30 in the morning yesterday. Or, yes, earlier this morning.
You're probably up, being a new dad.
I was up. I didn't check my phone, but I was up dealing with Aaron at that point in time. But the Anaheim Ducks have traded Carl Hagelin to the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for David Perron and defenseman Adam Clendenning. The Ducks, of course, acquired Hagelin in the offseason from the Rangers in exchange for Emerson Edom, who has already been traded to the Vancouver Canucks. So I think you can clearly say that the Edom for Hagelin trade did not work out for anybody. But what are your thoughts on the Penguins acquiring Hagelin from the Anaheim Ducks in exchange for David Perron and Adam Clendenning?
Well, Pittsburgh is trying to complement Crosby and Malkin with guys who have a little bit more of a straight-ahead kind of game. And so what you have in Carl Hagelin is David Perron is a really good puck handler. He's not going to be kind of a straight-ahead player. You know, he's going to be playing off of he likes to make moves. He's more of an east-west guy, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And there's only one puck to go around. And David Perron, to me, is successful when the puck is on a stick.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a top-end guy, but he's successful when the puck's on a stick. A guy like Carl Hagelin plays on your more depth lines or can complement on the top players. He's a speedster. And he's going to be more familiar in the Eastern Conference. Does he have great hands? No. But he plays really hard, and he's really fast. He'll get into dirty areas, and he brings a different dynamic to the team. So I don't mind this move at all for Pittsburgh. What Anaheim is looking for here is more offense. Hagelin clearly didn't fit in what they were trying to do. And Perron will probably help a little bit more off the cycle game there and make plays and create for himself. So I can see the move from both sides in terms of what they're getting. Clendenning, I don't know enough about to say, but he's moved from Chicago to Vancouver and out of Pittsburgh to Anaheim. Probably confident enough saying that he is not, you know, a game-breaking kind of player.
Yeah.
But I don't really know a lot about him.
Yeah, Clendenning's still relatively young. I think he's 23 years old. He can move the puck, Richie, but at this point in his career and projecting forward, he's a depth defenseman, right? I mean, the key players in this trade are Perron and Hagelin, and Hagelin has been awful this year for Anaheim. And Edom was awful for the Rangers, and that's why they traded him to the Canucks.
But we said Edom wasn't going to be a player before that. I mean, Hagelin surprised me. I still think Hagelin's a player, by the way. Mm-hmm. Just not in Anaheim. It wasn't working out.
Yeah, no. I mean, he can score. We've seen that over the years with the New York Rangers. And, you know, you make a good point, Rich. Perron is the type of guy. He likes to have the puck on his stick. He's also got a physical element that I think the Ducks have been lacking since they moved Edom and Bolesky. Like, if you remember in the playoffs last year versus the Ducks, I mean, the Ducks caused the Jets all types of physical problems. Kessler is a physical player. Boschman is a physical player. Bolesky laid that big hit on Adam Party, if you remember, in the playoffs. And I think that's what Perron will bring. And whether Perron slots in as a second-line winger or a third-line winger, I don't think it matters. He just gives them depth, right? So it's kind of an interesting trade. But Perron was with Crosby over the last couple of years, and he just didn't seem to work out. Like, Dupuis and Kunitz have been his regular wingers.
Too many of the same guys.
Right. And they need, as you mentioned, Hagelin is a better offensive player than Perron at this point in his career. Not to say that Perron can't still contribute offensively, but I look at it and I think each team is improving in a certain area. They get a little bit quicker with Hagelin on Pittsburgh, and they get a little bit more physical, and they get a little bit of a different element. As we know, Anaheim likes to play that game with guys like Corey Perry.
Sure.
Like, they kind of like to play that down-low cycle type of game.
Yeah, the one aspect we haven't talked about is the fact that Hagelin is on the books for three more years after this season at $4 million, and that the Penguins don't really have much in the way of salary cap space, 1.9 as it stands today. Anaheim gets Perron, who's on the books for the remainder of the season, at 3.8. So they're making similar amount, 3.81, similar amount this year. Now, we broke down, I think.
And then Perron's a UFA afterwards.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So he's off the books. So this is kind of Anaheim getting away from the contract and clearing up space for themselves. I see both players, the reason for the acquisition of both players, but I will say that Jim Rutherford is not looking big picture here. They got to sign Olli Maatta. Nobody's coming off the books of significant consequence money-wise this season. Nobody who's making anything more than $1 million is coming off the books. Not even $1 million is coming off the books, although there's bonuses and such. Okay, no.
Ben Lovejoy, 1.1.
1.1, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
There you go. So you're this the dollar's bad. Canadian dollar's bad. Revenue, the cap might not go up much. And then you're bringing in $4 million before you've signed Maatta. That's forcing your hand on another deal, maybe that somebody else is making. Another aspect of this to take into consideration is down the road, when your core is 27 to 29 or 30 and you're all signed fairly long term, you're going to have a team very soon that's going to have a bunch of 31, 32-year-olds on big deals.
Now, Richie, even though Jim Rutherford might not be thinking long term or at the very least making good trades for the long term, I like how he's making moves, right? Moves Rob Scuderi to get Trevor Daley. Mm-hmm. I like how he's making moves because the Pittsburgh Penguins,
that
right
move,
now, they're not good enough to be a playoff contender. I mean, they might squeak into the playoffs, but I mean, they're a pretty big mess right now, especially on defense. And they're not getting a lot of goal scoring after Crosby and Malkin, right? So I like how he's making moves to change the dynamic of the team. But I agree with you. This team set up, is it set up long term for success? I don't know about that.
It's set up for salary cap problems long term. One other trade, this happened yesterday. It's a three-way deal, which I didn't know the NHL was still allowed to make. The Montreal Canadiens send Jared Tinordi. What you were going to say?
Well, I mean, it's a bunch of players who aren't very effective, and so much was made about it.
Well, I think so much was made about it because of the John Scott angle and the All-Star game angle. So Canadiens send Jared Tinordi and minor league forward Stephen Fournier to the Arizona Coyotes for John Scott and defenseman Victor Bartley.
Right. Can I just get in here for a sec, Drew?
Sure.
I mean, I'm not of the belief, I'm not one of these theorists that believe that John Scott was traded just so he isn't going to play in the All-Star game. Look at the trade. I mean, Jared Tinordi was a guy who was given ice time in Montreal, right? And he's been in the AHL this year. Big defenseman, son of Mark Tinordi, if you remember. He used to play for the
North Stars, Capitals, right? Amongst others.
He's a guy that could still be an NHLer. I don't think he's going to be a top four defenseman, but he's a guy, a big guy that could probably be a fifth or sixth defenseman. I think he's, what, 23 years old now?
Almost 24, yeah.
24.
He was a first-round pick of the Habs.
Yeah, I mean, the Coyotes go after him. And really, to me, I mean, the Habs get Victor Bartley here. That's what kind of makes this trade happen. I don't think it's because they wanted John Scott, necessarily.
Oh, no, the Arizona wanted to include Scott. That was part of the
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. They and insisted. I mean, it seems like this trade, more than anything, just seems vindictive against John Scott to me.
I don't think so.
I don't think the trade is made to be even. First of all, why are we still talking about John Scott? Why does anyone care?
Because he's the captain of the All-Star team.
Why do people actually care about that?
I don't think that they care.
It's just filler on talk, radio, and TV.
I don't think that it's that they care. I think it's, I mean, to me, this seems, I mean, for the Coyotes to insist on John Scott being in this deal, it just seems like it's a vindict. They, you know, Bob McKenzie reported that they asked him to withdraw his name from the consideration of the All-Star team captain. He declined.
Which, by the way, that is ridiculous that they asked him to do that.
Well, regardless, he declined to do so, and then they trade him. It just seemed vindictive to me. I mean, and again, I don't care because it's the All-Star game, and the entire thing is a debacle to begin with. But, you know, why are you, you know, the Canadians, you know, don't want him. Nobody, why is he being included in this trade?
Well, that's Don Maloney next week.
Unless, why is he being included in this trade? Unless the Coyotes just feel the need to, you know, he refused to accept their request and they're pissed off. And so they're trading him to Montreal.
Why is he in the NHL? Like, he's not now, but why was
he's
he?
Not. He's
why was
AHL.
He? He shouldn't be, but that's not his fault that he was still in the NHL.
Yeah, but why does anyone care about this? I mean, is this like a Twitter-created thing that everybody just talks about for no reason?
I don't think it's Twitter-created. I think that I think it's talked about because it's pointing out how stupid the NHL is, first of all. to allow write-in ballots, and it's, you know, and you know, so did it start, you know,
this is, I think the NHL likes this because somebody's talking about the All-Star game.
I don't know. I think
I wouldn't disagree with that.
I think the start of it was sort of vindictive.
So it's like Roger Goodell and Brady.
No, I don't think so.
NFL doesn't like the Roger Goodell Brady is talked about every day for the entire
the
offseason.
The NFL would be talked about every day in the NHL.
Well, no, not to that extent, but yes, people being aggravated about it. Any story, any press is good press here. I don't think there's any negative effects on that. Nobody's watching or not watching the All-Star game because of this.
Well, I don't think anybody's watching the All-Star game to begin with. I mean, okay, regardless of the reasoning, I mean, it just seems like the fact that the Coyotes shipped him out just, you know, because everybody was doing the NHL a favor in preventing him from being able to play in the All-Star game. That seems like a fair bit of the motivation for him being included in the trade.
Maybe. I just don't know why anyone cares.
Well, if you're, you know, I think any time a league or, you know, organizations are being vindictive to a player, it is somewhat newsworthy.
Well, that's not necessarily
that vindictive.
The truth,
like, I mean,
yeah, I think they are being vindictive.
I can't skate, Drew.
I don't disagree.
Can't play
with
3-on-3. He can't skate.
I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, he shouldn't be an NHL player. I don't, no argument. But the NHL screwed up, and they should have to make the bed that they, you know, live in the bed that they made. You know, they made the rules. They screwed it up. People, for whatever reason, took advantage of the NHL screwing up. So, you know, why is that John Scott's fault? And it seems like he's the one being punished.
Well,
that's the point.
I mean, John Scott is named to the All-Star game. To ask him to not go, doesn't he get paid, by the way? Don't you get a bonus?
I think it's only if it's in your contract you get a bonus.
I thought every player got a certain amount of money for being named to the All-Star game. Maybe the winning 3-on-3 team I know wins $1 million. But
is that really the case?
Regardless.
This year?
Yeah.
Isn't there some kind of financial incentive this year? I don't follow the All-Star game.
None of us do. I won't
be watching the game. The game's terrible.
Yeah.
It's useless. And there's no need for it. Reason for it. And to me, I've said this before, if you wanted to get rid of back-to-back games and increase the quality of play, with due respect, improve the quality of play, like a game last night when you saw the Jets come in late and have all these injuries, you would give the players a little bit more time off throughout the year, and you would serve the fan base better than having some kind of corporate convention in Nashville this year.
No argument whatsoever on that point, Richie. Big thanks to our guest, Dave Isaac of the Camden Courier Post, Drew Spivak of BSNDenver.com, and Anson Carter, NHL on NBC analyst. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Psycho on Life, Keener Jerseys, and the Rady Fitness Center. For producer Chris, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for NFL playoff football here on TSN 1290.